You're listening to the Boogeyman's Closet podcast. Explicit language and spoilers ahead. You've been warned. And we are back for yet another episode of the Boogeyman's Closet. As always, I am Mike Alvarez.
Maurice Killifer.
And unfortunately, Susie can't join us today, but we do have two reoccurring characters with us.
Oh my god, I'm so glad you came back on. I've been stuck in this Skype call for a week.
Yeah, we left you after Identity.
Oh my god. Guys, you shut it down and I've been stuck in here in the internet. There are things you do not want to see.
We've heard a little bit about Rule 34.
Worse than Rule 34.
Oh, God. I hate to imagine. And who else is here with you? I think there's someone else here with you.
And I'm trapped in her backyard. It's Mike O'May.
Well, thank you both for joining us this week, guys. We're here for episode 110. We're continuing our whodunit movies with Saw from 2004. It's an hour and 43 minutes, directed by James Wan, who we would know from Dead Silence, Insidious 1 and 2, The Conjuring 1 and 2, and Aquaman. Let's go around the table and see what everyone thinks about this film. Dawn, we'll start with you. What are your thoughts on Saw?
Okay. Well, let me paint a picture. we're going to go back to 2004 when I worked in a movie theater. And I knew this movie was coming out. I was really, really excited for this to come out. Like I was like, it's a horror movie that doesn't look like all the stupid fucking Scream ripoffs. You know, right. That's what I was looking forward to. I was like, yay. And we used to, because I was manager, I used to tech these movies ahead of time. Side note, I got paid to watch six Saw movies. I didn't get paid for the last, for seven, Jigsaw or Spiral. I got paid to watch these movies. So I remember like staying after, wanting to watch it. Of course, everybody wanted to watch it. And if Hibbard was here, he would tell you I did not like people watching movies with me. Because I get irritated by every little sound in a movie theater. And so I made everyone like sit all the way down front and I was all the way up back. Like, and if I heard one word, they were kicked out. Like there was like 20 people because the other managers invited everybody. So I was really, really excited for this movie. I have the standee still. It's out in my garage because that's where you hang saws. You put the saw out in the garage. So I was really, really excited. So I haven't watched it in a while. And so when I watched it, I went, holy fuck, this is the worst acting I've seen in a really long time. there is some bad acting. But
I mean, I don't disagree with that statement.
But I still enjoy the movie. There's like a lot of the acting takes me out of a lot of this, but I will say I enjoy this movie more than some of the sequels because as we went later on, they were more focused on the actual traps and not the story behind, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't even tell you what happens in 4, 5, or 6. Like, I have no idea. Okay. I know one of them takes place at the same time as 3. That's all I know.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't even seen Spiral, so don't even ask me about that one.
Maurice, did you see Spiral?
Nope.
Okay, so none of us have seen Spiral.
I think Susie did.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, I know because me and Mike were talking about it the other day, and neither one of us had seen Spiral. So, but Mike, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts on this film?
I had an opportunity to buy Spiral today at Redbox. I love buying like Redbox used movies because they're like $4.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to own it, and it's a little bit cheaper than like actually just buying it on Amazon.
Right.
I didn't buy it. I was just like, meh. I don't care. It was hard to watch Saw this time because I haven't watched it since I saw it originally in the theater.
Oh, wow.
So knowing the twist, like I've got all the Saw movies because I feel like I should have them. in case somebody's ever like, can I watch the Saw films? I've got most of them. I didn't buy Jigsaw.
Yeah.
And I don't have Spiral. But apparently you don't need those. But knowing the twist is coming, it's very strange. It's sort of like watching a giallo the second time where you know who the killer is. Mm-hmm. But I still try to watch it critically and pull that out of my mind. I like it. It's really good. But it's not as good as that first viewing where you're like, whoa. You know, and they catch you off guard with the twist at the end, yeah. Which I'll kind of let you get to organically. But I like it. I wish there was more of the two leads in the Walmart bathroom and less of the backstory with the detectives and the whodunit aspect. Like, I really love movies like one location, two characters trying to figure something out. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like an indie film kind of vibe, which this has. But yeah, I like it.
Maurice, we'll toss it over to you. What are your thoughts?
Well, it was my first time watching it in a while, and yeah, I have to agree, the acting's pretty bad. But overall, I enjoy the movie. It's definitely the best one of the franchise.
Yeah.
And besides Jigsaw.
You bite your tongue, sir.
No, it's definitely the best one of the bunch, but overall, good movie. You know, like Mike said, the other movies focus more on the traps and stuff, and so you don't see as many in this one.
Yeah.
But the effects were okay for the time, and, you know, the killings were pretty cool. I think it was James Wan's first movie, right? It was his first directed movie?
No, I think he did, Stygian was the first one he did?
Yeah.
I don't know if but that was like a... I want to say like a student film type of thing. Like, it wasn't that big.
Yeah.
As I was saying, he directed the short of this before directing the whole movie.
Right. Well, they tried to use the short to sell this movie.
But yeah, overall, I enjoy it.
No, I have to agree. I'm I actually am really a big fan of this one. I kind of forgot how good this movie was because of how bad some of the sequels are. And, like, me and Mike were discussing this the other night. Like, I actually really like Part 1 and 2 quite a lot. Part 3 I absolutely hate. Like, I hate everything about Part 3. 4, 5, and 6, meh. Like, there's nothing there for me to be excited about. There's nothing there for me to really hate on. It's just, hey, it's more Saw. Part 7 I actually really enjoy because it's so ridiculous. That one, the opening trap with the girl, the girl, her boyfriend, and the guy she's cheating on her boyfriend with, trapped in the three-way Saw trap, that was kind of hilarious. And the movie just continued to get ridiculous as it went on, but in a good way. Then we got Jigsaw, and Maurice can attest to this. This was one of those movies that I was looking forward to seeing, because everyone kept saying, oh, it's a return to form. It's a return to form. Like, what movie did they watch? Because this movie was trash, like trash from start to finish. I wouldn't be surprised if it does end up on our most hated movies list, because it's really bad. The only good thing about it was Tobin Bell. Like, that's it. That's nothing else was good about that movie. But yeah, overall, I really like this movie. And watching it again for the first time in quite a few years, it reminded me just why this movie was as good as it is. It is a solid, like, it's a solid, scary horror film where you put yourself in the character's situations. Like, what would you do? You know, how would you react in this situation? And it's a terrifying thought experiment, you know? The sequels do become torture porn, and they become less scary because of it. Part 2 I find creepy because it, you know, puts you in the same kind of situation. Like, how would you react given this situation? But after that, it does focus far too much on the traps, which, you know, it's kind of the whole thing. If you see the monster too much, you eventually see the zipper on his back and it stops being scary. That's kind of the feel with this. When they focus too much on the traps, it just stopped being scary to me. The concept of being chained up and locked in a room and having to figure out how the fuck to get out, that's a terrifying idea to me. So I really did enjoy this film. I will hold it up as one of the better horror films from the early 2000s. And yeah, I would highly recommend this to anyone who likes a solid horror mystery movie. But let's go through.
I will say real quick, I do love the fact that it is like two people trapped in a room. Cherry was trapped in that refrigerator on Punky Brewster. Okay, that's the last of that. I'll just...
Nobody remembers Cherry, but they remember Punky. Is Cherry in the NBC Universal revival?
Yes, she is.
Damn it.
which by the way was not great. I watched it. It wasn't great. Even Freddie Prinze Jr. couldn't save it.
Okay.
It actually has been canceled. Like NBC's not doing anymore.
Oh really? Whatever. My joke still stands. Punky's in that Brewster, that freezer. I was gonna say when you're watching this, something that really will like take your enjoyment out of this is if you lump the sequels into this first movie. So you'll be thinking of backstory elements that aren't in this.
Yes.
Because you've got oddball plot threads that they threw into like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in their weird attempt to like stretch the story out,
mm-hmm.
which are useless and go nowhere. So you really have to try hard to ignore those.
Right. Well, and that's the thing with any franchise horror, you know, when you go back and kind of watch where it all began, and then you think about all the crazy shit that happens in the sequels, it can kind of dull how good the first movie usually is. It's kind of the same way with the Scream movies. Like when, as it continues on, like, and again, I love all the Scream movies, even in all their ridiculous glory. I friggin' love them. But if you watch part one, thinking about what happens, you know, in 2, 3, and 4, it does kind of dull the impact of the first film. And I think that that can be said with just about any horror franchise, maybe with the exception of Friday the 13th, because each film is just its own ridiculous romp. But so, yeah, let's go through the cast here. We have Adam, played by Leigh Whannell. I can never say his frickin' name. He was in The Matrix Reloaded, Insidious 1 through 4, Aquaman, and The Bye Bye Man, which, whoo boy, that's a hard one to watch right there. We have Dr. Lawrence Gordon, played by Cary Elwes, The Princess Bride, Dracula, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, Twister, Seinfeld, Liar Liar, Shadow of a Vampire, which I would love to get on here, The X-Files, Saw, Final Chapter, Stranger Things, and we will eventually see him again in Black Christmas 2019, because I know that'll end up on here one of these days.
You sound so disappointed about that.
Oh, God, that fucking movie. I really do need to watch it again before we get it on the show, just to like get all of my hate out. Cause man, I was angry with that film. But then we have Detective David Tapp, played by Danny Glover. Obviously the Lethal Weapon movies, Predator 2, the Badass sequels, Badass 2, Badasses, and Badass 3, Badasses on the Bayou. Criminal Minds, Jumanji the Next Level, and The Dead Don't Die, which was a pretty fun movie. And then we have Detective Steven Singh, played by Ken Leong. He was in Oz, AI, Vanilla Sky, Red Dragon, X-Men The Last Stand, Lost, Star Wars The Force Awakens, and The Inhumans. Then we have Detective Carrie, played by Dina Mayer. She's in Johnny Mnemonic, Starship Troopers, which I love her character in that movie. Bats, Saw 2 through 4. Piranha 3D, The Evil Within, and American Horror Story. Then we have Zep Hindel, played by Michael Emerson, who we would know from Law & Order, The X-Files, Lost, did voices for G.I. Joe Renegades. He did the voice of the Joker in Batman The Dark Knight Returns. Then he was in Arrow and Evil. Amanda, played by Shawnee Smith, who we already saw in the remake of The Blob. She's also in Murder, She Wrote, The Stand, Armageddon, Saw 2 through 4, The Grudge 3, and she did voices for Lollipop Chainsaw. We have Diana Gordon, played by Mackenzie Vega, X-Men The Last Stand, The Ghost Whisperer, and 13 Reasons Why. Allison Gordon, played by Monica Potter, who we know her from Boston Legal, Patch Adams, Parenthood, and the remake of The Last House on the Left. And then finally, Jigsaw, played by Tobin Bell. He was in Tootsie, Mississippi Burning, Alienation, Goodfellas, Seinfeld, The X-Files, Sopranos, the entire Saw franchise, and the god-awful sequels to that really bad Boogeyman movie, Boogeyman 2 and 3. So, yeah. That movie had so much potential, the first Boogeyman. It seriously was... It was a solid film until about the halfway mark, and then it all just came apart.
Is that where the name for the show comes from?
No, no.
Is it like, what's the history of the Boogeyman's Closet, or it just sounds cool?
It's actually, okay, it's kind of funny. I became obsessed with the idea of the Boogeyman after watching the Boogeyman episode of The Real Ghostbusters. I thought it was such a spooky idea. That in combination with how much Freddy Krueger scared me as a child, it was like, and you know, the idea that he was a boogeyman, could get you in your dreams, all that stuff. I started looking up various boogeyman mythos as I was a teenager and found this one story that always stuck with me. Now, the idea was that if you feel that you're being haunted by a boogeyman, if there's a boogeyman in your room, you're supposed to go outside of your bedroom and look in the keyhole, you know, after midnight. If he's after something you own, you'll see him rummaging around, looking through your things, trying to find something, you know, what it is that he wants. If he's after you, you'll see the eye staring back at you through the keyhole. And that scared the crap out of me when I read that, which is why the symbol for the show has always been the eye in the keyhole. But yeah, I've always enjoyed the idea of a boogeyman, something that knows your fear. Something that knows, you know, just what it is that scares you and how to use it to get to you. So it's one of my favorite mythological creatures. But, you know, and obviously I always spelled it the traditional way, the original boogeyman before the English, like, you know, the Americanized version with the two O's, which I never understood because that's a dance thing, but whatever. But anyway.
And no one's half the battle.
G.I. Joe.
Boogeyman, do 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 do.
I still have there's a whole history with the Boogeyman's Closet. Like, this name has had a very long history. It started off as a horror movie review site back in the tripod days. Then became the imprint for mine and Joshua Strasberg's comic label. And we actually had a whole boogeyman character that tied into like several of our stories that we were writing. Then it became my guild in World of Warcraft for like several years. And now it's the podcast. So this cool. name has been used since I was about 17 years old. So fun stuff.
Before you get started, I had a joke planned where I was going to run my voice through a modulator a la, Mangalore. Where I was going to say, like, I'd like to play a game. And then I was going to joke that Susie was trapped in a refrigerator. But unfortunately, I got home 5 minutes before the podcast started. So use your imagination of how funny that would have sounded.
I told Mike last night, I'm bringing up the Punky Brewster thing.
I was waiting for it.
Oh, see, I beat you to the fridge.
Yes, you did. You took the joke. Fair play. Fair play, Don.
I think it can die in peace now. Yeah. Maybe.
Well, don't go too soon because we need you for next week, too.
Oh, that's true. Am I going to be needed for Scream as well?
I mean, maybe.
I mean, it is the month of whodunits.
This is true. But for anybody who's been living under a rock and never heard of these films, the plot to this one is pretty basic and probably the best out of all of them. Two strangers wake up in a room with no recollection of how they got there and soon discover they're pawns in a deadly game perpetrated by a notorious serial killer. So it's a very simple but effective plot. I really can't say enough good about this film. But... We open the film up with Adam waking up in a tub of water and kind of lurching forward. We see like a glow stick with a key on it circling around him in the water. As he sits up, it pulls the cord to the tub. The key and the glow stick go down the drain along with all the water. So he jumps up, gets out of the tub, confused as hell. Room is pitch black. He finds that his ankle is chained to a pipe, and he calls out for help. Somebody in the room answers him, telling him there's no point in yelling. I've already tried. Adam tells the man to turn on the lights, and he goes, like, what if I could? And then suddenly goes, hang on, I think I found something, and turns on the lights. I'm like, oh, that was convenient. Like, you didn't search the wall beforehand. You were just sitting there in the dark contemplating everything. Thought that was a little strange. But the lights turn on, and we see, as Mike put it, they're in a Walmart bathroom. and there's a corpse laying in the middle of the room between them with a pool of blood coming from his head. And the man we see is holding a gun and a recorder.
Every Walmart bathroom looks like that, by the way.
I mean, you're not wrong. Complete with tub.
What? They never, I think they established it in a later movie. Did Jigsaw build the bathroom? Or is that just like horror movie land? There's just a toilet and a bathtub and pipes everywhere.
I thought it was somewhere under the house that's used in two.
Okay.
Yes, I think, but it's connected to a sewage treatment plant. So,
if you stop and think about the existence of this bathroom, it makes no sense at all. And clearly, somebody's been using it for long enough to decorate the walls.
I mean, Jigsaw is a crafty motherfucker, so he could have just went to Home Depot and built a bathroom underground.
I feel like he did.
And then just dingied it up himself.
And then shat all over it.
Well, as we discussed on Count Creepyhead, you know, people kind of do that. They just go into a room and explode.
Yeah. So, you know, he was bored while waiting for somebody to wake up in one of his traps, and was just like, yeah, I'm going to do some tic-tac-toe with a turd.
I'm going to go shit on the ceiling.
Yeah.
But so Adam sees the corpse, starts puking and freaks out. Then he starts screaming and yanking on the chain to on the pipe, freaking out, you know, trying to get out. The other man, who we find out is Dr. Lawrence Gordon, tells him to calm down. And they start asking each other, you know, what can you remember? Blah, blah, blah. Adam tells Gordon, I went to bed in my shithole apartment and woke up in an actual shithole. It's like, that's all I remember. Gordon tells Adam that he was on his way home from work, and that's it. Everything went black. That's the last thing he remembers. So they're kind of looking at the corpse, and Adam comments that he's never seen a dead body before. He goes, they look different in real life. They don't move. And I was like, it's kind of funny considering how this scene plays out. Like, again, knowing the twists and turns along the way. But Adam suddenly freaks out and pulls up his shirt, telling Gordon to check him and see if he has any scars. He's like, this is what they do, man. They kidnap you. They drug you. Before you know it, you're lying in a bathtub and your kidneys are on eBay. Which, oh, that's just dumb. But Gordon tells him his kidneys aren't missing. And he's like, what are you, a surgeon? He goes, yeah. And he goes, this is where he finally asks him, you know, what his name is. And Gordon tells him that, you know, basically introduces himself and tells him they need to start thinking of a way to get out of there. That whoever put them in there could have killed them if they wanted to, but that means that since they didn't kill them, they want something from them. And Gordon then notices a clock on the wall and comments that it's brand new and that someone must want them to know the time for some reason. So they're slowly piecing the little, you know, the little clues together. So Gordon tries to push on the door to the room, but it won't budge. Meanwhile, Adam checks his pockets. Oh, sorry, were you going to say something?
Yeah, because he's literally tried to push it. It's obviously that door slides. Like, mm-hmm. it's so obvious that door slides. You idiot.
Right.
Such a fucking idiot. Like, you didn't try that first anyways, but okay.
Well, keep in mind, he didn't even try to find the lights. He just sat there in the darkness like, I guess I live in darkness now.
Right from the minute go, everybody is in panic mode.
Yep.
And nobody's trying to, like, figure out the problem.
No one really has any survival instincts in these films.
No.
And that's what Jigsaw's trying to teach people. Survival instincts.
Yeah.
But Adam checks his pockets and finds a small plastic baggie with an envelope inside with his name on it. He opens it and finds a mini cassette that says Play Me on it. So Gordon asks him where he found that. He tells him in his pocket. Gordon checks his pockets and also finds an envelope with his name on it. In his is a mini cassette and a single bullet and a small key. He immediately tries to unlock his shackles, but of course the key doesn't work. So he throws it over to Adam, who tries it on his shackles, and no lock. Gordon tells him, you know, to get the cassette player from the dude, from the dead guy. And he tries to reach out there, but he can't. You know, it's too far away. So he tells him to use his shirt. He takes his shirt off and starts throwing it, trying to get it. He was throwing it so haphazardly, just like, meh. Like, just barely trying. You know, gets it out there, can't get the cassette recorder. So Adam looks around for anything to help him. He pulls the stopper and chain from the tub, ties it to his shirt, and uses it to lasso the recorder and pull it over to him. He puts his tape in, plays it, and we hear a distorted voice. We hear the famous Jigsaw voice. It says, "Rise and shine, Adam. You're probably wondering where you are. I'll tell you where you might be. You might be in a room that you die in. Up until now, you've simply sat in the shadows watching others live their lives. But what do voyeurs see when they look into the mirror? Now I see you as a strange mix of someone angry, yet apathetic, but mostly pathetic. So are you going to watch yourself die today, Adam, or are you going to do something about it?" Adam looks at Gordon and tells him, "I don't get it." Gordon tells him to throw him the player, and Adam's like, "No, I don't, you throw me the tape. All I can think of is throw me the idol, I'll throw you the whip." But Gordon tells him that he's not going to risk, you know, breaking the tape recorder. Or Adam tells Gordon he's not going to risk breaking the tape recorder, so just throw him the tape. So he begrudgingly agrees, throws the tape over. Now he puts Adam's tape, or Adam puts Gordon's tape in, and we hear the same voice say, "Dr. Gordon, this is your wake-up call. Every day of your working life, you have given people the news that they're going to die soon. Now you will be the cause of death. Your aim in this game is to kill Adam. You have until 6 on the clock to do it. There's a man in the room with you." And he says, "When there's that much poison in your blood, the only thing left to do is shoot yourself. There are ways to win hidden all around you. Just remember, X marks the spot for the treasure. If you do not kill Adam by 6, then Allison and Diana will die, and I'll leave you in this room to rot. Let the game begin." So Dr. Gordon tells Adam to throw him the recorder. He finally does. Gordon catches it, rewinds it, plays it again, and tells Adam to be quiet. Very faintly on the tape, we hear a man whisper, "Follow your heart."
By the way, hold on. He pitched a fit about throwing that recorder. Yeah. And then when he does it the second, when he goes, "Give it here," and he goes, "Okay."
Yeah, I was going
to say. Like, you just went through this whole fucking spiel of, like, what if it breaks when I throw it over to you? Blah, 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 blah. Oh, okay, here you go.
Well, that was you,
dumbass.
How did Gordon hear the whisper from that far away? You know, it was like he heard the whisper enough to be like, "Oh, wait, throw it here."
Plot device.
Exactly. But they look around the room for any sign of a heart, and Gordon spots one drawn in poo on the toilet near Adam. He tells him to check it out. Oh, this is so gross. Adam sticks his hand in the murky, stank water and starts fishing around, gagging. He pulls his poo-covered hand out, and Gordon says, "Anything?" And he goes, "Well, no solids." I was like, oh, that's disgusting. So he tells him to check the tank, you know, on the back. He pulls off the lid and finds something in a plastic garbage bag. And Adam just looks at him and is like, "I wish I had it checked in here first." He then doesn't wash his fucking hand off in the water in the back of the tank. Like, he just has poo hand for the rest of the movie.
Whose shit is that?
I'm going to guess Jigsaw.
Or is Jigsaw so crazy that he frames some guy to take a dump in the toilet?
"I want to play a game. There's 80 XLX pills inside your body."
"Hello, Michael. I fed you a 5 cheese tortellini dinner. You have 5 minutes to make it across town or your poodle will die." You know, I mean, like, would he go that far just to, I don't know.
I mean, probably. It is Jigsaw we're talking about. He seems obsessed with making other people do weird shit.
Well, if they need something for the next sequel, there you go.
How did the poo end up in the toilet? Who is the person what pooed?
I can just picture the poster of a brown spiral.
Going down a drain.
Yes.
Oh, Lord. So Adam opens the bag and we see 2 hacksaws. And there's something else in the bag, but Adam hides it and throws the bag in the tub. He immediately starts trying to hack through his chains. Gordon tells him to give him the other saw. Adam does so, and then they continue. They both, you know, start trying to cut through their chains. Neither one are able to actually cut through. And Adam's saw ends up breaking. He flips out, throws the broken saw at a mirror that's in the room, breaking a chunk off of it, which clatters to the floor. So Chekhov's mirror. We'll get to that in a minute. Gordon slowly, you know, starts, you know, or slows down on sawing on the chain and realizes that their captor doesn't want them to saw through their chains. He wants them to cut through their feet. The chains are way too thick, which made me question, like, okay, like, is it gonna saw through bone easy enough if it can't saw through that chain? It's just, ugh.
Yeah, I don't think it would work on either.
Yeah.
Guys, come on. Movie's got a movie.
She said the thing. But Adam,
if you're drinking along with the rest of us, that's one.
Gordon tells Adam he thinks he knows who may have done this to him. He clarifies that it's not someone he knows personally, but someone he heard about, and the last he had heard, the police still hadn't caught him. We fade in on a police investigation of a crime scene with Dr. Gordon narrating. He says the only reason I knew that the police hadn't caught him yet is because I was a suspect. He then says, I'll start at the beginning. So we see the police at a room underground with a big cage and a dead man in it. The cage is crisscrossed with razor wire, and one of the cops explains that he died of blood loss and that some of the cuts were so deep that they found traces of stomach acid on the floor. The detective holds up a tape player and plays it. We hear Jigsaw on the tape talking to the victim. Basically, it was a middle-aged man who attempted to commit suicide by cutting his wrists. Jigsaw asks him if he wants to die or was he just looking for attention. He says, if he truly wants to die, just stay in the cage and it'll be your tomb. But if you want to get out, you have to cut yourself again and again to find a path through the razor wire to get to the door before 3, which the door will then lock, sealing him inside. The detective tells him that the door was on a timer and he was given 2 hours to try to escape. So Detective Tapp looks at the body and sees Jigsaw cut a piece from him. So this thread was kind of dropped throughout the rest of the films, but he always would cut a piece, a puzzle piece out of the person.
Did you feel that like Danny Glover was just on autopilot?
Oh, yeah.
Just playing Danny Glover.
Is that I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yeah.
I was going to say, he never said that in this movie.
He just sighed heavily a lot.
Danny Glover is my spirit animal.
I mean, truth be told, I love Danny Glover.
Oh, yeah.
He's awesome. But, like,
just every time you see him, he's just like, oh, God. And it's like, I know, Danny. I know.
I always feel like he's just playing Detective Murtaugh.
Yeah.
Predator 2, it's pissed off Murtaugh. You know, badass is it's retired Murtaugh.
I don't know what he saw. Lives in a dumpy studio apartment, Murtaugh?
It's middle-aged, or was it midlife crisis, Murtaugh?
Sure, I'll take it.
But Gordon goes on to tell Adam the newspaper started calling him the Jigsaw Killer. He goes, although technically speaking, he's not a murderer. He never killed anyone. He finds ways for his victims to kill themselves. We cut to another crime scene. In this one, the victim is burnt to a crisp. We find out that he was a perfectly healthy man faking illnesses. Jigsaw poisoned him and locked him in a room. There's broken glass all over the floor, a safe in the center of the room, and hundreds of numbers painted on the wall. The man is smeared with a flammable substance, which they never really tell us what it is. It just looks like friggin' Vaseline. And Jigsaw tells him that the antidote to the poison is in the safe, and the combination is written on the walls. So he had to carefully check the numbers using the candle to light his way and not drop it while stepping on broken glass. So pretty fucked up. But eventually he drops it and burnt to death. So Detective Carey points out that there was a peephole in the wall, telling the detectives Tap and Singh that Jigsaw likes to watch his sick little games. Only this time he left his penlight, which she holds up in an evidence baggie. Tap tells her to check it for prints. Now we cut to Dr. Gordon with his medical students at the hospital. He's showing them some x-rays of a man's brain with an inoperable tumor. He kind of goes on talking about how it started off as colon cancer and, you know, he ended up being riddled with cancer. An orderly, Zepp, speaks up and tells Dr. Gordon his name is John and he's a very interesting man. This pissed me off. Gordon thanks him sarcastically and tells his med students, as you can see, our orderlies form very special bonds with the patients. And then the med students try not to laugh. Like, what the fuck? Like, oh, he cares about a patient. Oh, what a loser. Like, this, really?
This one scene, I don't want to spoil the ending, but remember this, that Zep in this movie is the only person that cares about John.
Right. Right.
He's the only orderly that gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets repaid later very strangely for that humanity and empathy towards a man dying of cancer.
I feel like there could be a college thesis written about that. Like what empathy will get you in modern society.
And this is how the sequels just kind of like bungle everything. But
yep.
Yeah.
But Dr. Gordon gets a page overhead, returns to his office, and finds detectives Tap and Singh waiting for him. They ask him where he was between the hours of 11 and 1 the night before. He doesn't want to answer, and they tell him he needs to come downtown with them for questioning. So we cut to the police station. Gordon is talking with his lawyer. His lawyer asks him where he was, and Gordon slowly admits that he was with someone who wasn't his wife. His lawyer tells him that he's going to have to bite the bullet, give his alibi now, because no one will believe him later. So we cut back to Gordon and Adam in the dirty bathroom, or the Walmart bathroom. And he says that was 5 months ago. He tried to set me up for murder. Then back at the police station, Detective Singh tells Gordon that they checked his alibi and it holds up. Singh goes on to tell him that one of the victims who survived is there, and they would appreciate it if he would stay and listen, and maybe it would jog his memory of how his pen light could have possibly ended up at a crime scene. So they sit around and listen to Amanda's testimony about what happened to her. She's on the other side of like a two-way mirror. So she goes on to explain her story, and this is fucked up. This is the one that most people remember. It's, she has the reverse bear trap on her head. So she wakes up, in this dingy room. She says all she could taste was blood and metal. We see a TV in the room turns on with the saw puppet Billy on the screen looking at her, and it tells her, "I want to play a game." Then it goes on to explain the rules. Basically, the device on her head works like a reverse bear trap that once the timer counts down, it will spring open, ripping her head in half. The key to the lock on the device is in the stomach of her dead cellmate. Amanda struggles to free herself. When she stands up, she pulls a wire that starts a countdown on the headset. So she goes over to the man lying in the room, finds a scalpel next to him, and as she realizes what she needs to do, she holds it up. The man starts to wake up, so he wasn't dead. She panics, stabs him to death, digs through his guts, finds the key, unlocks the device, and flings it off just in time before it snaps open. Back in the police station, Detective Singh explains to Gordon that that the man was heavily sedated and could barely feel anything, let alone move. Which is kind of funny, because we saw him move. but whatever. Back to Amanda in the trap room. She sits on the floor crying. And a puppet rides out on a little tricycle and tells her, "Congratulations, you are still alive. Most people are so ungrateful to be alive, but not you, not anymore." Back in the police station, Tap tells her, "You're in fact a drug addict, aren't you? Do you think that's why he picked you?" And Amanda nods yes and cries. He asks her, "Are you grateful?" And she tells him, "He helped me." So, which that'll play into later sequels. But we cut back to Gordon and Adam in the Walmart bathroom. I'm going to keep calling it the Walmart bathroom.
By the way, that is for anybody who's interested, that's the short right there that they released beforehand, except it was Adam in that position telling that whole story, that with the bear trap and everything. So if you ever see the short, that's what it is.
Well, and you can if you win our contest.
This is very true.
Yes. Fun fact, they used to give that short out all the time as like a giveaway at conventions, Hot Topic. I had it.
That's how I got them.
Yeah, it's long gone, but it was like a little teeny tiny DVD with the short on it, and pretty cool.
That reverse bear trap thing, like that is, like, I mean, it's the most iconic trap in the entire franchise, but it's just such a horrific idea. Like, ugh, having your head split like that. There is a local cosplayer. I forget her name, but I have a picture of her from Nickel City. Her and her one friend dressed up like Billy the puppet and was, you know, riding around on a tricycle. And she was dressed up like Amanda with a homemade version of the headgear. And it was impressive as hell. So, I mean,
well, that's how I met Chris Alex, you know, my friend we promoted way back on Fright Night. That she that was her cosplay for a costume contest, was that Amanda costume, actually, with the bear trap. She did not win. We were kind of bummed about that. Maybe she did win on that one. I can't remember. One of them she did not win on, and we were really, really bummed. We were just like, how?
Those head traps are impressive. I've seen a few of them, but the one at Nickel City was the only one I've seen up close, and I was impressed. It looked really cool, but I can only imagine the amount of time it takes to build something like that. But anywho, back to the Walmart bathroom. Adam argues with Gordon, asking how do I know you're not the one who put me in here? Gordon points out that he's in the exact same situation, so how could he be the killer? Adam gets pissed, telling him, no, you're not in the same situation. You have one thing I don't. You have information. He then picks up the piece of mirror that fell earlier, Chekhov's mirror, and threatens to cut Gordon with it. I'm like, how? How are you going to do that? You're going to walk over there? You're chained to a wall. What are you going to do?
This acting is so bad.
It really annoyed me. I was like, bitch, please. But Adam looks at the mirror shard and realizes that it's a two-way mirror. He grabs some debris, you know, rocks, fossilized turds, etc., and hucks them at the mirror until it shatters. Behind that, we see that there is a camera recording them. So, cut to the two of them looking at the camera on a staticky black and white monitor, and someone waves a gloved hand at the screen saying, I can see you. And
in a very wide screen, which at that time I don't think was available. That kind of technology. It is very obviously two cameras set up just perfectly to film the same section.
Right.
This movie is almost 20 years old.
Oh my God. That just made me feel really
old. I know. I feel really old too.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Widescreen. You know, this is back in the days of like candy color IMAX. Film. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the cell PCRs phone we see later.
Yeah, flip phones.
Yep. Oh my God, that's crazy. That made me feel old. So we cut back to Adam being pissed and continuing to throw poo at the glass. And he says, I didn't write it down, but Gordon says something to him and he's like, oh, I'm having a lot of fun. This is the most fun I've had without lubricant. And it's like, wait, what?
Yeah, he did say that.
It's so random. But Gordon tells him it's useless, that he won't break the glass, that every possible angle has been thought out by Jigsaw. Adam tells him, sounds like you admire the prick, which is funny when you consider the sequels. But Gordon tells him the tape told us to find an X, so it has to be somewhere in the room. He said, help me find it. He begins looking around. Adam is still flipping out, asking how he can be so calm, and taunts Gordon, saying, he's got your wife and kid. Aren't you thinking about that? Gordon gets mad, telling him that's all he's been thinking about, that he hasn't stopped thinking about it since he heard that. And he can't stop thinking about the last thing he said to his daughter. So we cut to Gordon's daughter waking up in bed at night, looking into a shadowy corner of her bedroom. She creeps down to her mom's bedroom and tells her this is something that all kids do, where, you know, this creepy fucking thing, where you're dead asleep and they'll just stand by your bed. Have you experienced this, Mike?
Explain this.
Where a kid wakes up in the middle of the night and they come to your bedroom and just kind of stand there. They don't wake you up. They just stand by your bed waiting.
Yes. Good God.
It's fucking terrifying.
They just watch you sleep.
My dog's done it.
Oh my God. I was like,
my daughter will touch my face.
Oh my God.
Like, pick my nose or like touch my eye. Yep. Oh no. Yeah.
Oh my God. When Caleb was really young, he would run in the room and he would just kind of stand at the end of the bed and he would wait. And it's like, you know, you kind of feel like someone's there with you. So you wake up and there's just a kid standing at the foot of the bed. And my natural instinct is to kick, to be like, get rid of the thing that's there. And I've had to stop myself so many fucking times. And it got so bad, like, he would do this so often, that there was a time when Jess had to stay in the hospital for a few nights after an operation, and it was just me and Caleb at home. And I told him, I'm like, buddy, if you come in the room, please do not come to my side of the bed and stand there. I'm like, announce yourself, say something. I was like, I'm afraid I'm going to freak out one of these days and kick. And he started laughing. He's like, okay. Well, the next day he woke me up. He was standing behind the closed door, just his head peeking in the room, going, Dad, Dad, Dad. Woke up and I just see this disembodied head and freak out again.
Our way to solve this problem is we put bells on all the doors to hear her coming and going. Or if you're going to have like, okay, mommy's like out of town. Mm-hmm. It's just like, all right, we're just going to, you sleep on this side of the bed. I sleep on this side of the bed to avoid these weird ass moments where you come in the middle of the night or you decide to get up at 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, No. We're just going to avoid all of that.
Yep. That's, ugh. And it's funny because I've talked to so many different parents who have had this exact experience. So as soon as she did this, I'm like, yeah, that is totally a thing kids do. Like, that's legit. But her mom wakes up kind of like, you know, what's going on? What's wrong? And she goes, Mommy, there's a man hiding in my room. So, of course, she assumes it's her imagination. And then she goes, he talked to me. So mom tells her, okay, I'll go check your room. And Diana says, I want daddy. He'll get the scary man. So Allison and Diana go to Larry's office where we see him typing away, or Gordon. Allison tells Diana Allison tells Gordon that Diana had a nightmare again and wants him to check her room. So he makes him wait until he's finished typing and then he comes to check. Gordon goes, tucks his daughter into bed, tries to assure her that everything will be fine. And he gets a page on his pager, and she tells him, I hate that thing. And he goes, I have to go to work. He goes, you know how daddy's work is. So he leaves Diana and tells her, and she says, you're not going to leave us, right, daddy? And he looks taken aback and tells her that he would never leave them. He tries to assure her that everything will be okay. He, you know, tells her goodnight and promises, tomorrow I'll read you your favorite story. So now we see Dr. Gordon and Allison arguing as he's getting ready to head to work. Now, obviously, the daughter can still hear all this. She asks him how much longer he can pretend to be happy. He tells her that he is happy, and she tells him that's complete bullshit. And then she'd rather have him freak out on her than continue to pretend everything is okay. So we cut back to Gordon and Adam in the bathroom. Gordon tosses Adam his wallet to show him a picture of his daughter. Adam asks where his wife is, and he tells him there's another one behind the one you're looking at. He goes, it's my favorite because we're all in it. Normally, I'm the one holding the camera, so I'm missing from all the photos. Adam pulls out the photo and finds a Polaroid of Allison and Diana bound and gagged. It says regards on the bottom of it, and there's a puzzle piece drawn on it. On the back, it says X marks the spot. Sometimes you'll see more with your eyes shut. So Adam hides the picture from Gordon and tells him the photo wasn't there and tosses his wallet back, leaving Gordon confused as to why the killer would take the photo. Then we cut back to the little flashback with Gordon and Allison. So she's yelling at him. He leaves for work. And upstairs, we see Diana laying in bed still, looking scared. Her closet door begins to creak open. A voice says, good night, little girl. And we see a man peeking out from her closet, very much like Black Christmas. And she just screams, and then the door bursts open.
Mike, so, let me ask you a question.
That was really creepy.
It was.
Do you have a picture in your wallet of your wife and son bound and gagged?
I do not.
Because I, in my wallet, those are like my favorite pictures where I play kidnapper, tie my family up.
Well, of course.
It just brings a tear to my eye where I'm like, oh. Remember that time when I woke him up in the middle of the night and bound and gagged them and tied them to railroad tracks? That was hilarious.
Twiddled my mustache going, yeah. Yeah.
Sorry. Sometimes it's in my head, it's hilarious. And then in delivery, you're like, yeah.
No, I thought it was funny.
But here's my issue with this scene. Right? Larry has literally just walked out the door.
Yeah.
Like, literally on the other side of that door. He does not hear his wife and daughter screaming.
I know, right? Like, that was... Yeah.
By the way, his daughter is the best actor in this whole movie.
Sad but true.
Yeah. She is the only one, I believe, in any of these scenes.
I mean, I still say Tobin Bell's a great actor, but he barely does anything in this one. So.
Yeah. He plays one hell of a corpse.
This is true.
Best damn corpse play I've seen since... the last time I saw someone play a corpse.
Since Bernie?
Yes, since Bernie.
But so Allison goes running, you know, to help Diana. She opens the bedroom door and sees someone standing by her daughter's bed with a blanket over his head and just reaches out and grabs the daughter. Cut to Allison and Diana tied up and gagged with someone in the room with them, a gun in their belt, and he's holding a stethoscope. We cut to him taking the stethoscope and checking Diana's heartbeat. So we hear her heartbeat, and then he takes out the gun, puts it up to her mom's head, and listens as the little girl's heart rate increases. I'm like, that fucked me up. I ain't gonna lie. As a parent watching that scene now, that really fucked me up. I was like, I don't like this. He then puts the gun away and gives Diana a teddy bear. Like, that's gonna fix things. So he watches out the window, and we get a brief glimpse of the man's face, and we see it's Zep from earlier in the movie.
So I'm like you, I got triggered by this.
Mm-hmm.
But I immediately thought of my daughter not cooperating at all. And just being a gigantic pest.
What you gonna do with that gun?
Yeah, like, can I hold it? What's this? Like, sticking her finger in it, like Looney Tunes style. And just like, you know, he's trying to get her to, like, you know, stay still and be scared. And she'd be like, look what I can do. And, you know, like, putting her foot behind her head, or, you know, like, just something insane. That, because that's kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
I say that's actually very accurate. But we cut to someone across the street watching the window through a camera. We pan out and see that it's Tap. He's in an apartment with tons of photographs on the walls and newspaper clippings. He's become a man obsessed with tracking down and stopping Jigsaw. Clearly, he still believes Gordon has something to do with it as he's watching Gordon's place. We get a montage of different Jigsaw cases with Tap saying, I should have never let you go. Now we cut to Tap dropping off Dr. Gordon. Gordon tells him he's sorry he couldn't have been more help, and Tap tells him, we arrested a dentist last week who liked to play with kids a little too much. Live two blocks from here. The sewer lines run right under this neighborhood too, Doc. I'm like, okay, is he just basically saying you're all shit? I don't get what that, like, I don't understand what he was trying to say there. Like, can anyone explain how that made sense?
Nope.
I have a feeling it's something like your shit stinks too, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, it's a weird line. But
I think I watched the director's cut last night. But there's still a lot of, like, giant glaring holes that I think the movie was just cut up very badly, and there's just stuff missing.
Well, I know they also had to, like, I was reading in the trivia, like, they had to add scenes to kind of pad the runtime. So maybe some of these random scenes are like, just put something else with Gordon talking to Tap.
Yeah, there's lots of, like, shaky camera. I'm in a trap.
Exactly. But we cut to Tap watching the puppet video from Amanda's case. Singh and some other officers come through, and Singh tells him that, you know, he'll be with them in a minute, and Tap continues to rewind and play the footage. Singh asks him if he wants to join him for a beer. Tap refuses, and Singh tells him, I mean no disrespect by this, but you need to get yourself a girlfriend. And Tap and him kind of chuckle, and Tap continues to watch. Singh looks worried, but leaves him to his tape. Then suddenly Tap notices something on the tape and calls Singh back. He shows him some graffiti on the wall in the background that's very specific to a gang whose territory is only a few blocks wide. He also cranks up the volume, and we faintly hear a fire alarm in the distance. Tap tells Singh that they need to find the fire records that occurred in that area for the last 2 weeks. Singh excitedly gets to work. So they find a possible location, which is an old mannequin factory on Stygian Street. I was like, that's appropriate. It's also one of Juan's first movie with Stygian.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's the River Styx, you know, crossing over into the afterlife.
I mean, if it wasn't that Scooby-Doo layer, it would be the abandoned amusement park, the old razor blade factory.
Wait, wasn't there an abandoned amusement park in one of the sequels? Or am I getting movies mixed up again?
Hell, if I know, you're probably right.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I feel like there was one that was like a boardwalk type amusement park thing, where there were some traps, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure that with brain cancer, Jigsaw had the time to find an abandoned amusement park to torture somebody to prove a point that's just a teeny tiny thread as to why his wife was in this one place at this one time, and he's mad about it. And that's why you have to make out with a bear or whatever crazy trap he has.
Make out with a bear?
And you got to remember, on top of all of this, too, he somehow was torturing Donnie Wahlberg, you know, through at least 7 of these movies.
Yeah. This is true. He gets a lot done. He's very productive.
So Singh asks Tap if they have enough for a search warrant, and he tells them who said anything about a warrant. And they get their things and go. We cut to them breaking into the factory, guns drawn and ready. Tap sees the graffiti from the video, and they continue to look around. They find a model of one of the traps that are of the trap that Gordon and Adam are in. I'm like, okay, wait. He had time to not only build the trap, but to build little scale models of each of the traps, too. Like, come on, man. Like,
he is an engineer. He wants to perfect them before he has to do them.
It's just, how did he have this much time? But they also find the dummy from the video, from Amanda's video, and a pig mask with a wig. And suddenly something under a blanket starts moaning and moving. They pull the blanket back and find a man bound and gagged and stuck in a trap where 2 power drills are on either side of his head.
Are you sure this isn't Don's bedroom?
No. Do you have men bound and gagged with power drills?
I played the fifth on that one.
But
before and not in my bedroom.
it's the basement. But before they can even attempt to save him, they hear the elevator coming and they turn their attention down the hall. Tap wants to put everything back so they can see who this guy is. Singh just wants to take him out. Tap convinces him. They cover everything back up and hide. Jigsaw comes in wearing a hooded robe, so, you know, us as the viewer can't see who he is yet. He uncovers the victim, which I think, what was his name? Jeff or something like that. He's like, oh, you're awake. I need to use more sedatives next time or something like that. But he explains that his life will be given to something greater. He's a test subject for one of his traps. I'm like, oh, dude, that sucks to be you. You're not even one of the victims, like, you know, that are supposed to escape. He's just making sure it can kill somebody. Like, which doesn't that kind of go against Jigsaw's whole shtick? You know, that he doesn't kill, that he wants to see if you have what it takes to survive. Like, if he's testing the traps on live subjects. I feel like that
his shtick doesn't develop until part 2.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, good.
Yeah, because it doesn't even hold up in this movie. Because what was Zepson? Nothing.
He was nice to Jigsaw. He was the only person that cared.
Yeah,
that and he still gets shit on. So
everybody's a pawn. So Singh and Tap pop out of their hiding spot and tell him to freeze. Jigsaw starts the trap, and the drills slowly start moving toward Jeff's head. Jigsaw waxes on about which is more important, arresting him or saving an innocent life. Tap tells Singh to stop the machine and holds Jigsaw at gunpoint. Singh yells at Jigsaw to tell him how to turn it off. Jigsaw tells him that there's a key in a box next to the machine. Singh opens the box and there's like 50 keys in there. He immediately starts trying them as the drills keep getting closer. Tap tells Jigsaw to get on his knees and tells, you know, he's like, you're sick. And he goes, you're right, I am sick. I'm sick with a disease that's eating away at my insides. And it's like, okay, we find out more about that later.
So dramatic.
Right?
Oh, go shop at Hot Topic.
Oh, I'm sure pretty much everyone that watched this movie when it came out were shopping at Hot Topic. I know I was. but I was
still
only kind
of shop at Hot Topic.
I was only buying toys and collectibles. I wasn't buying the clothes because they didn't make them for fatty, fatty, fat, fats.
I was going to say, I was lucky if I could get a t-shirt in my size.
Yeah, no. I had one t-shirt from Hot Topic and I was like, yeah, this doesn't fit good. But anywho, Singh gets fed up and just shoots the ends of the drills off. Tap looks up, Jigsaw pops a knife out of his little sleeve and slashes Tap's throat. Tap falls down choking on his own blood. Singh shoots at Jigsaw, but he gets away. Singh tells Tap he'll be back and chases after Jigsaw. We see Jigsaw running down a hall. Singh shoots him in the back and he falls. So he heads down toward the body. The hallway appears to be covered in cobwebs, but there's a tripwire there. Singh walks over it. It's connected to several shotguns above him. They go off. They explode his head. Bye-bye, Singh.
By the way, this is where you should have called for backup when he was running away.
Yep.
They can only afford two police officers in this movie.
Actually, that doesn't surprise me because I believe, like, the guy in the with the in the chair getting the drills was like one of the producers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the bulk of this film's budget went to Cary Elwes and Danny Glover.
Oh, pretty much. Well, speaking of Danny Glover, I love this scene because Tap struggles to follow after Singh. He's just gurgling and groaning like, bah, bah, bah. He reminded me of a South Park character at that point. Like, do you guys ever see the homeless episode of South Park?
I'm so backed up on South Park. Like, I haven't watched in 10 years.
I catch episodes randomly. There's a Dawn of the Dead parody of South Park with homeless people. And there's this character who was burnt alive, and they're still alive. And they're just like, as they walk, they're like, rah, 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 like the sound they make is hilarious. And Tap kind of reminded me of that character, and I couldn't stop laughing.
I mean, I could totally picture the sound, like the voice effect, because they've used it
yeah.
on 100 different things. So, yes.
So he stumbles down the stairs, like holding his throat. And he sees Singh laying dead in the hallway. And then we see Jigsaw stand up and escape. And, you know, so we see Tap, like, reaching out, like, no! And then it cuts to like, a black and white moment and, like, freeze frame. And we cut back to Tap sitting present day in the room, throat scar very prominent. And he mutters, I had you. I had you on your knees. But you're running. You're running scared because we had you. We're gonna close this case. We're gonna close it, right, Singh? So Tap has clearly lost it. But back to the Walmart bathroom with Adam and Gordon. Adam is still hiding the photo and acting shiftily.
How funny would it be if people randomly walked in to use the bathroom? While they're chained to the wall, and the people would just act like it's normal in a Walmart bathroom.
Well, it would be normal in the Walmart bathroom.
You know, so they'd be like, oh, God, call the cops. And just be like, just don't look at me. I have to go. You know, and then it would be like, dumb and
none
dumber.
None of us want to be here. Just like, let me do what I need to do.
Subway shoots through me. Just give me a second. Don't make eye contact, please. You know, while they're like, I'm going to saw my own foot off. You see it all the time in a Walmart bathroom.
I feel like you've just come up with the premise for a scary movie version of Saw.
I feel like they've done.
I was going to say, I think they actually did the bathroom. I think it's the exact same bathroom. They borrowed it.
Oh, did they really? See, I haven't yeah. seen all the scary movies.
I can't. I think it's in the second one. I think they borrowed the actual bathroom for the or it's the one that was used in 2. Like, this one got destroyed, and after they did Scary Movie 2 just took it, you know, to do it.
See, I thought Scary Movie 2 was out before this, but I could be wrong.
I can't remember, to be honest. They all blur together.
Because I remember
the only thing I remember about Scary Movie 2 is this is my strong hand.
See, because I remember Scary Movie 1 and 2 because I watched both of those at the drive-in. I really did not like Scary Movie 1, but Scary Movie 2 actually was pretty funny. That one, the dude with the little hand and Tim Curry, they were both really good in that.
This, it's all Chris Elliott.
Yeah.
Who is an unsung hero of comedy.
A motherfucking genius?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, he is. But, so now I can't stop picturing, you know, random people coming into the Walmart bathroom. Oh, that would be awesome. But Gordon asks him to help him figure out what, you know, what to do. And Adam goes, I'm thinking. Gordon goes, well, don't leave me in the dark. And Adam goes, then turn off the lights. It's like, oh, the acting was so bad here. Gordon looks skeptical, but he does. And he sees there's an X on the wall behind him. So Gordon looks shocked and says, why didn't we see that before? Adam says the lights hadn't charged it. It must be glow-in-the-dark paint. Like,
you know, these two are getting so many clues more than any of the other victims.
This is true.
It's like he wants them to succeed.
This is true.
And Mike, look, I know we're going to hang out at some point. I keep missing all of you guys. Whether that's on purpose and I'm an introvert or not remains to be seen. But I will probably have to use your bathroom at some point. If there's a treasure map in there, Saw style, with hearts and X's and stuff on the walls, not my fault. Okay.
Oh, see, now I'm going to have to anticipate you coming over and draw a fake little poo heart on the toilet.
Who said it was going to be fake?
Well, no, I'm just telling him it's going to be fake. You know, never mind. Pretend it's fake.
Are you going to lick the walls like Willy Wonka?
Is that chocolate or poo?
Oh, no. Chocolate or poo? Wait, I can't tell. Is it? Yeah. No, that's definitely poo.
These poo berries taste like poo.
Oh, God. I feel like poo berries ties into the Breakfast Werewolf episode.
Speaking of Breakfast Werewolves, I found Monster Mash at Tops, by the way.
I still haven't found it.
Okay, so I put on Facebook that I got some dairy-free Ben & Jerry's.
Mm.
And everybody was like, oh, my God. Making funny comments. And then your buddy in Austin, not Josh. Oh.
Yes, Josh Strasburg.
Strasburg was like, you got to put Count Chocula in it. It's the best. So don't you know, middle of the night, I want some ice cream and I want some cereal, but I'm out of it. So I'm sitting on the couch with the pint of Ben & Jerry's, and I just take the box and pour it right into the pint of Ben & Jerry's and overflows everywhere. And I'm still finding Count Chocula all over the floor in the couch cushions. Like, I think I got it all. I clearly didn't. So I treated it like a bowl of cereal when I should have taken, like, just a splash. Like a pinch out of the box with my hands. I just poured the whole thing onto this tiny pint of Ben & Jerry's.
See, now that actually sounds pretty awesome, though. I may have to try this.
It tasted great, I think. I sort of remember it tasting good.
You were in Breakfast Werewolf mode.
Yeah, it was.
So they see the X on the wall, and Gordon bashes open the X with the whatchamacallit, the saw that he had. So he bashes open the tiles, finds a little lockbox behind it. He was like, where's my key from the envelope? And Adam finds the key, tosses it over to him. Gordon unlocks the box, and we reveal a cell phone, a lighter, some cigarettes, and a note. Adam immediately starts begging Gordon for a cigarette. Gordon looks at him like he's crazy and goes, you're going to put something we found in this room in your mouth? And he's like, yeah, I'm willing to risk it. And I'm like, ew, and he's got poo hands still. He's going to be touching that with his, gross. Gordon takes the note, which says, it says, shh, doctor, on the outside. He unfolds it, and it reads, the cigarettes are harmless, I promise. Smoking is only poisonous when it ends in bloodshed. He goes, think about this. You don't need a gun to kill Adam. Gordon opens the cell phone, tells Adam he's trying to call the police. He dials 911, and of course, nothing. Gets a beeping tone. So Gordon realizes the phone wasn't meant to receive calls, not make them. So Gordon looks like a confused dog for a moment and says, wait, this happened before. Last night when I finished at the hospital. Like, his recollection was so bad. So we flash back to Gordon going to his car in a parking ramp. Yeah, I can speak. He says, I thought I was alone, but I'm sure there was someone else there. He pinches the bridge of his nose and closes his eyes, and suddenly there's a camera flash, and Gordon's like, huh? Who dat? I was laughing my ass off at this scene. But we see Gordon trying to leave, and he gets out of his car and has to call security to unlock the parking ramp gate. And just in case we didn't understand this, because most garages don't do this, there's a sign posted right next to the exit saying that for your security, the garage is locked after 10 p.m., after 10 p.m., call the office at extension 13. So Gordon dials the phone and gets a busy tone and looks confused and tired. In the mirror above his car, we see the back door to his car slowly open and Jigsaw crawls out in a piggy mask. Gordon takes out his cell phone, tries to call, but gets the same tone as the cell phone from the Walmart bathroom. He looks confused. Suddenly, Piggy Jigsaw rushes him and gets him. Back in the bathroom, Adam is looking at the doc shiftily, and Gordon asks him, how did you know to turn off the lights? And Adam goes, instinct. Like, again, I love him in the Insidious movies, but he's terrible in this movie.
Well, so, I wrote a note here because Larry does say, you're a terrible liar. And then I wrote, an actor.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he sure does. Or sure is. He goes, what else aren't you telling me? And Adam goes off on a little rant. He's like, oh, there's a bunch of stuff I didn't tell you. Like, when I was six, or at my sixth birthday party, I got stabbed with a nail by my best friend. Or how my last girlfriend, who was a feminist vegan punk, broke up with me because I was too angry. I was just like, okay.
Shut up.
Exactly.
You can kill him now, Gordon.
Right. I was like, he's giving you plenty of reasons to do it. So Gordon tells him to just stop. And he's like, you knew to turn off the lights. How? And Adam finally fesses up, showing him the photo that he found in his wallet. Gordon looks terrified and asks why you didn't show me before. Adam tells him that he just couldn't. So Gordon freaks out, yelling at the camera. And he then looks down at the box with the note and the cigarettes. Adam isn't looking, and Gordon dips the tip of the cigarette into the blood of the poisoned man. So he makes sure he did, like, he goes out of his way to make sure that the camera can see him. He's like, put his hand up, like blocking his view from Adam. And then he gets up, shuts off the lights. And then we hear him whisper something to Adam. So we cut to Zepp in the control room, watching the black screen on the monitor. And he can't hear what they're saying, but then the lights turn back on and Gordon asks Adam if he still wants that cigarette. So now,
was that the equivalent of like turning your radio down when you're in a car looking for an address? Like, Seriously.
But I love it because the bad acting then turns to fake bad acting, which is even worse bad acting.
Do they ever establish that there's poison in one of the cigarettes, or there's just two cigarettes and some more vagueness from Jigsaw?
No, there's poison in the man's blood. So the guy who shot himself, because in the tape earlier, he said, when there's that much poison in your blood, the only thing left to do is shoot yourself.
It's
and then
chemotherapy, though.
No, right? But he meant like he was trying to make it seem to Dr. Gordon that the guy was dying of something, like he had poison right. in his body. So the blood would be poisoned, because then the note says, you know, you don't have to use. Or he said that cigarettes are only harmful when they end in bloodshed. So he was like hinting at use the blood. But anyway, so he asks him if you still want the cigarette. And Adam's like, well, yeah. So he tosses him the clean cigarette and the lighter. Adam lights it, smokes, and then very badly pretends to die. He's like literally the Bugs Bunny, you know, poison to death animation where he falls over. The only thing he was missing was holding up a flower at the end.
It was finally acting I could get behind, though. You know, it was the most believable in the whole movie.
They really should have had some drinks in front of them and did the whole same bit from Princess Bride.
But so Gordon yells at the camera. He's like, there, I finally killed him with the poison just like you wanted me to. Now let my family go. Suddenly, Adam is electrocuted and jolts up, freaking out. So their shackles are rigged. Gordon flips on him, saying, like, that was our only chance. He's like, did you not hear me? I was just electrocuted. So he gets mad and starts trying to saw at his chains again with no luck. Adam suddenly says, I remember everything now. And we get Adam's flashback.
I really wish they would have tried to saw some other stuff other than the chains, like the rusty pipe.
It's funny you mentioned that. There was an original plan for that. They apparently, this whole scene where they were, you know, in darkness, they had a scene that they shot where they cut a length of pipe off the wall and were talking into the pipe so they couldn't, like, so, you know, the person recording couldn't hear that. So that's how they were talking back and forth, was through a pipe.
Well, I stand vindicated.
But apparently, James Wan said that he thought it was a little too unbelievable that the saw could hack through a pipe, but not through the chain. And I'm like, I don't think that people would have found that unbelievable, because every pipe in that room was already dead with rust.
It would have if you took the time.
Yeah.
But you'd still have to saw a big ass chunk out of it to get the chain off.
Right.
Anyway, all right, yeah, it doesn't matter.
So we get his flashback. He's walking back to his apartment with his headphones on. He goes into a dark room in his apartment. We see a bunch of random photos hanging up. He hangs some up of Dr. Gordon. We see Adam waking up hours later in his dark room. Total darkness now. He goes to flick on the lights, but they won't work. He tries a flashlight, which also won't work. He hears a noise out in his apartment, grabs his camera, and goes to investigate. He's using the flash to get glimpses of his apartment, which, truth be told, that this is always creepy in a movie when you're using a camera flash to try to, like, quickly get glimpses in a dark room. And suddenly, he starts calling out, you know, is there someone there? And he's like, I can hear you. And he reaches down and grabs a baseball bat. He suddenly hears a maniacal tinny laugh and turns and sees the puppet. He beats the fuck out of it with the baseball bat. And really, I can't blame him. I mean, that's the most logical move in that situation. kill it.
Yep.
But he hears another noise and calls out asking who's there. He threatens that if they don't come out, he's going to kill them. Slowly, he opens the closet door, uses the flash once more, and sees Pigsaw, it was Jigsaw in the pig mask, rushes out and grabs him by the face. We cut back to Adam and Gordon in the Walmart bathroom. Suddenly, the cell phone rings. Gordon answers it, and it's Diana, his daughter. She tells him that the bad man from her room is there and that he's tied them up and has a gun. She begs him to come home. Like, again, that part got me. But Zep takes the phone from Diana, puts it up to Allison along with the gun against her head. She tells Gordon, she goes, Larry, is Adam there? Gordon looks confused and is like sputtering, like, how did you know? She continues, don't believe Adam's lies. He knows you. He knew all about you before today. Zep takes the phone and hangs up. Gordon flips out, yelling at the camera, if you so much as lay a finger on them, I'll kill you. You know, does the whole bad acting thing. Adam watches timidly and asks, are they okay?
You fuckhead.
Right?
Are they okay? Why is he screaming?
You're right.
Well, obviously they're not okay, you little shit. Fucking take one of the saws to your throat. Okay, that's a little much. Sorry.
I mean, he kind of does deserve it. But so Gordon tells Adam that is what his wife said and that she said not to trust him. And Adam acts all innocent for a moment and Gordon yells at him to stop lying. At this point, the truth comes out. Adam calls him out for lying about going to the hospital after he left his house the night before. He tells him that he's been taking photos of him for a few days. He reaches into the bag that's in the tub. We finally get to see what was in the bag with the hacksaws. He throws the contents of it at Gordon. It's a stack of Adam's photos of Dr. Gordon. Adam tells him that he gets paid to take photos of rich guys who go to seedy out-of-the-way motels to fuck their secretaries. Adam then explains that the pictures were in the bag, or in the bag with the hacksaws, and he doesn't know how they got there. And I'm like, maybe the same way you did, numbnuts? Like, really? The dude was in your apartment. He abducted you from your apartment where the photos are. Like, what do you mean you don't know how they got there? It's just... So, like, again, I love this movie. I know I'm being kind of hard on it right now, but there's some dumb shit and some logic leaps.
Don't look too closely.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we found that out with a lot of our favorite movies on this show. Yeah, there's movies we absolutely love, but when you start tearing it apart, it's like, yeah, it doesn't hold up.
Nope.
But Adam comments to Gordon, what did you do in that motel last night, Doc? You were there, or you were out of there pretty fast. So now we cut to Gordon going into the motel and meeting with one of the resident doctors from earlier. It's very clear that he's having an affair with her. But he goes there to break it off. Before he can leave, the phone rings. The woman looks, or woman answers it and tells him it's for you. Gordon looks terrified, but answers anyway. And the voice on the other... Oop. Everything all right?
Sorry. Fall.
Oh, that's right. I just wanted to make sure everything was okay. I didn't know if the headset came off or something.
I fell out of my chair.
You fell out of your chair?
Yes.
Are you all right, dude?
I'm just great.
Are you on the floor?
I'm okay.
But was the chair in the fridge? Was the chair in the fridge?
I was trying to get out, and I thought if I put my feet against it and my back against the back of the fridge and pushed, and no. Still trapped in here. In the Walmart bathroom, in the Walmart refrigerator, that doesn't open from the inside.
Quick little side note, I actually did fall in my chair 2 weeks ago at work. And it was really dumb how it happened. Because, like, all right, I know I'm going off on a little tangent here. But sometimes when I'm sitting in the chair at work, like, I'll cross my legs and kind of have it under the chair by the wheels. And I was just kind of sitting there like that, you know, talking to my coworker. And I dropped something on the floor and I leaned forward to pick it up, but didn't brace my legs. I left my legs crossed underneath the chair. So when I leaned forward, the chair went shooting out from under me. I just face planted and the chair landed on top of me. It was probably the most embarrassed I've ever been at work. Because yeah. I didn't know what the fuck happened. I literally was like, how did I end up here? Like, I was so confused. But yeah, my coworker.
I have a chair in my living room that it's a recliner and there's two positions, and every time it just randomly will go back into that second position without any kind of warning, and it feels like I'm falling out. It's like, oh Jesus!
The arms splayed out like, nah.
Yeah, like, oh fuck, I'm gonna fall out. Oh, it's, I'm good. Oh, then my dog comes running over. Like, what happened? I can look at your face at this position. Thank you.
My current computer chair, like, normally I leave it in the locked position so it doesn't lean back, because it leans really far back and it feels like I'm going to fall, even though, you know, it's balanced well, but it feels like I'm going to fall. I forgot to lock it the one day and I stretched and the whole thing kicked back. And my God, I kicked my computer desk so hard trying to get my balance. It was like, oh, this sucks.
I was on the edge of my seat. I didn't realize it, and I went to go adjust, and the chair just kicked out from underneath me, and I just, like the joke where you pull a chair out from underneath somebody?
Yep.
That's what happened. So I'm not sure what you guys saw. It was probably my head smashing into my chair.
Oh, no.
The crying, though, I don't know where that came from.
That wasn't well, you at all.
As long as you're okay. But, so, falling out of chairs aside... back to Gordon talking on the phone to the person in the random motel, and the person on the other end says, I know what you're doing, doctor, and then they hang up. So Gordon leaves looking nervous. We end this scene back with him back in the parking ramp right before Adam takes a photo of him. Adam explains that the man who paid him to take the photos calls himself Bob, and he paid him $200 a night up front. Gordon asks what he looked like, or what he looks like. And Adam tells him he's a tall black guy with a scar around his neck. We flash back to Detective Tapp standing in Adam's apartment paying him. Gordon realizes who it is and tells him about Detective Tapp and how he was discharged from the force after his partner was killed. That he became obsessed with Gordon, convinced that he was involved with the murder somehow, and kept harassing him. Gordon yells at Adam for helping Tapp invade his privacy. And Adam asks that he goes, what are you more mad about? The fact that I took photos of you or the fact that I took photos of you after you cheated on your wife? And Gordon tells him that he never cheated on his wife. He breaks down looking at the photo of his wife and daughter, asking how he could have possibly got there. He already had it all. We then see Zep regagging Allison and Diana. Allison tries to calm Diana, telling her to be strong and that she's not going to let anyone hurt her. We pan down and see Allison struggling against the ropes tied around her wrists, and they're just like covered in rope burns. Like, she's been digging away trying to get out of there. But back to Adam and Gordon in the Walmart bathroom, and Adam looks at his photos again and realizes there's someone standing in the window of Gordon's place. He asks him if there was anyone home with your wife and kid the other night. Gordon tells him no, and Adam throws him the photo. Gordon looks at it and recognizes Zep. He flips out, saying how he's going to take great pleasure in watching him pay for all this. And then Adam looks up at the clock and points out to Gordon that they're out of time. Gordon looks up and we see that it's 6:00. We cut to Allison getting free of her ties. Zep in the control room shuts off the monitor and as the timer hits 6:00. He loads his gun. Allison hears Zep coming in, pretends to still be tied up. Zep tells her that Dr. Gordon is out of time and that he has to do this. You know, he has no choice. He takes out her gag and puts the phone up to her head. The cell phone rings in the bathroom. Gordon answers it. And on the other end, Allison says, "Larry, you failed." And then immediately jumps on Zep, getting the gun from him. So she holds it to Zep, gets the phone, and tries to find out where Gordon is. He tells her he's being held captive and tries to tell her how sorry he is for everything. So she's basically holding Zep at gunpoint. Diana's still tied up. She's trying to figure out what the fuck to do next. Diana says, "Mommy." Allison takes her eyes off of Zep for a second. He jumps up and grabs the gun from her. The two fight, wrestling to get the gun from one another. Shots are fired. Gordon is freaking out on the other end of the phone. And across the street, Tap sees the gunshots, you know, the flashes in the window. He loads his gun and moves. So Allison gets some scissors out of her nightstand and stabs Zep in the leg and runs to help Diana. Tap bursts in, tells Zep to freeze, and they begin shooting at each other. I love this part here, though. Tap hides behind a pillar that's like the size of his arm. It was like something out of Looney Tunes where they hide behind a fence post. It was great.
You can't see me.
So Gordon is hearing all this, just freaking out. Back at the house, Allison and Diana get out of the room. Tap tackles Zep, and the two fight. Zep clonks Tap on the head with a vase, knocking him on his ass. He then runs out of the room looking for Allison and Diana. Zep calls out to them, saying, "I'm going to kill your husband now, Mrs. Gordon." And he hobbles out of the room. So we see Tap load his gun and chase after him. Now, back in the bathroom, Gordon lay on the floor crying, flipping out after hearing all the commotion on the phone. Suddenly, he's electrocuted hard and passes out. Adam screams at him to wake up, freaking out, thinking he's dead. Gordon slowly wakes up mumbling about being electrocuted. And he's like, "I told you they were rigged." He gets all pissed, yelling, "Fuck this shit." And now we get a quick driving montage of Zep being chased by Tap, which apparently in the trivia, they never actually drove the cars. They were in a warehouse with a bunch of smoke machines and people just shaking the cars back and forth while they filmed it in sped up motion.
Yeah, it's kind of obvious.
Yeah. But I just thought it was funny that they were like, you know, "We're not going to actually drive these things."
Not in the budget.
No, it wasn't. So they arrive at the sewage treatment plant. Zep runs in and Tap follows. In the bathroom, the phone begins ringing and it's just out of Gordon's reach. He's freaking out. Gordon starts screaming like a madman, pulling at his foot and the chain. He takes off.
Like his very first actual performance of the movie, I believed.
Right. He takes off his shirt, ties it around his leg, bites down, grabs the saw, and Adam freaks out, screaming at him not to do it. Gordon begins sawing at his own leg. We cut to Tap catching Zep. They fight with fight with each other for a minute. Like, Tap's holding Zep's gun, who's trying to point it at him, and proceeds to beat the shit out of each other. Zep finally gets the gun. Tap struggles with him for a moment. Zep points it at Tap's chest and fires. So, bye-bye, Tap. Back in the bathroom, Gordon crawls over to the gun that the dead man is holding. You know, now he's sans foot. He loads the single bullet into it. Adam begs him not to kill him. Gordon apologizes and just says, "My family," and shoots Adam. So Adam drops. Gordon sobs and screams that he's done it. Now show him, show his family to him, make sure they're safe. And then we cut to Allison and Diana being taken care of by the neighbors. Allison is trying to get a hold of Gordon, but obviously with no luck. Zep opens the door to the bathroom, sees the carnage. Gordon flips out, grabbing at Zep's leg, calling him a bastard and telling him, "I'll kill you." And he's like clicking his little empty gun at him. Zep checks Adam, turns his gun toward Gordon, telling him, "You're too late." Gordon says, "Why?" And he goes, "It's the rules." Just then, Adam jumps up like, "I'm not dead yet." Just grabs Zep and beats the fuck out of him with the toilet tank lid.
I don't know why that's insane. There's a few movies where that happens. I'm thinking like True Lies. Mm-hmm. Just the thought of getting beaten with a heavy ass toilet lid.
Yeah. Well, they did that in the Evil Dead remake too.
Yeah, like you're really getting killed when somebody kills you with a toilet tank lid.
Yep.
That's extra death.
So Gordon tells Adam that he has to go for help. He's like, "If I don't go, I'm going to bleed to death." He tells Adam not to worry, that he'll bring someone back for him. So Gordon,
lies.
Right?
Lies.
Lies and misleading.
Go by the sequels, it's complete lies.
He slowly crawls out of the room as Adam, you know, is crying. And Adam begins searching through Zep's pockets looking for any key to the shackles. But instead he finds a tape player just like the one from before. Adam clicks play and hears the same voice from their tapes, and this one says, "Hello, Mr. Hindle, or as you're called around the hospital, Zep. I want you to make a choice. There's a slow-acting poison coursing through your system that only I have the antidote for. Will you murder a mother and her child to save yourself? Listen carefully, if you will. There are rules." Adam looks horrified as he holds up the player. In the background behind him, we see the dead man on the floor start to get up. Adam watches as what appears to be a dead man gets to his feet, pulls off a latex cap on his head where we see, you know, the bullet wound was fake. The man tells him the key to the chain is in the bathtub. Then we see Adam flashback, remembering waking up with the glow stick floating in the bathtub and it going down the drain. We now get a flashback montage. Zep telling Gordon that he's, we see Zep telling Gordon he's a very interesting person. His name is John. We see the man in the hospital bed who, you know, was the dead guy in the bathroom. Gordon telling his students about John's inoperable tumor, then tap and sing when they almost caught him. We hear John talking again about his disease. We hear John saying, "I'm sick of people who don't appreciate their blessings." We see Gordon fighting with his wife, then a montage of all of Jigsaw's victims, including Adam and Gordon. Adam grabs Zep's gun and goes to shoot Jigsaw, who electrocutes him. And Adam, you know, drops to the floor, being electrocuted again. Jigsaw walks to the door, shuts out the light, slides the door shut and on Adam, who's, you know, laying there screaming in the darkness. Jigsaw tells him, "Game over." We cut to black. The credits start to roll as we hear Adam screaming and begging, and that slowly fades away. So, Adam gonna die in there.
And what did Zeb do?
Nothing.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I kind of like this. I like this Jigsaw a little bit more. Like,
yeah,
Jigsaw without morals is a little scarier to me instead of Jigsaw without rules. So if you live a pious life and you're not a dick, he's not going to put you into, you know, make out, like, spin the bottle with a grizzly bear. Or whatever. But in this one, he'll use anybody to get to his ends, which was apparently to get the doctor to cut his own foot off.
Right. And that's the thing. It's like, when you really start to break it down, like you said, don't look too close. When you really start to break it down, there's parts of it that really don't make sense. Like, he mentions here he's tired of people who don't appreciate their blessings. So it's like, all of his victims are people who aren't living their life to the fullest, according to Jigsaw. Now, that carries through in the sequels, but there's more rules to it in the sequel version. Whereas this one, it's like, you know, yeah, I want to get back at these people, but I'm just going to kill you to test my trap, and I'm just going to, you know, poison you to basically to be a means to an end. You know, it's, I kind of like that version better as well, where he doesn't give a shit. He's focused in on certain people, but he doesn't care who he has to kill along the way to get to him.
I agree.
You know, whereas the sequels are just like, oh, you know, you fucked up somehow. Now you got to pay.
You know, conversely, well, if there were never any sequels and this was just a good standalone, we would never know.
This is true.
I was going to say, 2 kind of still goes by that. It still was a bunch of people who, you know, didn't appreciate their lives, but they all were linked to the one person they were trying to get revenge on. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, and honestly, I guess it starts to really fall apart once Jigsaw is no longer, well, once Tobin Bell,
once that John. Other, I was going to say, once it's that other guy, I can't remember who it is.
Well, when it's Amanda, too, like, she doesn't follow John's rules at all. Because this is why I hate part 3 so much, is because with part 3, they're all inescapable traps. Like, all of them are like, you're going to die. There's no way you're getting out of this alive. Like, the first trap, the dude has metal rings, like, hooked through his body in ways that you ain't going to escape. It's like he's supposed to yank the rings out of his flesh to be, because he's all chained up. He has, like, two through his Achilles tendons. He has one through his fucking jaw. Like, literally through his jaw. Like, how are you gonna, like, there was ones through his forearms and shit where it's like, okay, yeah, you're just gonna tear the muscle and the skin. That's gonna suck. but you can still move. You literally have to rip your entire lower jaw off to get out of the one. And if you rip your Achilles tendons, like, you ain't going nowhere. Like, how the fuck were you going to escape? Like, that just, that drove me nuts.
If I was a betting man, I'd say they just ran out of ideas for traps.
Yeah.
Well, what is it, this round three, the point where they actually were asking, like, fans to submit their different kind of traps they come up with, too? And they were just picking the best ones?
If those were the best ones, I'd hate to see the ones that didn't make it. Because all of the traps in part three, I was like, this is stupid. Like, there was the one where the person was, like, they were hooked up to some kind of machine that had, like, there were cables going into their skin wrapped around their rib cage. And, like, it was like a rib spreader machine. So it's like, yeah, what's the timer?
That's the Dina, the one in the beginning, the Dina Myers trap.
Oh, okay.
She's got to get the key out of the acid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's just fucking dumb. Like, it just, I hated it so much. And I remember being so excited to see it because I loved the first two. So I'm like, oh, they're making a third one. This is awesome. And I went to see it and I'm like, this sucks. Like, this is so bad. And that was actually the last one that I saw in the theater up until Jigsaw. And I kind of wish that I didn't see Jigsaw in the theater.
I'm amazed that you remember all of these details about movies that sucked. Like, past part two, there's just bits. And I couldn't tell you, like, what one Mark or Donnie Wahlberg's head gets crushed between ice blocks. I don't know.
I think that's four.
I think that's four.
Because I don't think he's on anymore after that.
I just was like, I'm not going to devote brain space for this after I saw it the one time, you know?
See, four, five, and six, that's the kind of blend together bullshit.
Yeah. I can't tell the difference between any of them. I know, like, yeah. I said, I know one of them is at the same time as four or three or something like that. I don't know if it was four or five, mm-hmm. but they're going at the same time. But yeah, other than that, I couldn't tell. The only thing, I by the time four came around, I went, whenever they end this, I said they better bring Cary Elwes back and he better be the new Jigsaw. And of course, when seven came around, that's exactly what happened. Spoiler.
Yeah.
That
makes sense.
It was the only logical way to end it. And it ended fine. They did not need to do any more after that.
And I totally agree with that, because part seven, I actually thought was, like I said at the start, was a fun movie. It's dumb. It's got a lot of dumb shit in it, but it's a fun flick. Like, part four, five, and six, I could take or leave. Like, they don't really matter in the grand scheme of things. Part three, I absolutely hate. So, but one, two, and seven, worth watching.
I'm sorry. The fact they never brought Macaulay Culkin in killed it for me.
Well, now if we reimagine this as, you know, adult Kevin McAllister as Jigsaw, that could be something. That could be a Christmas special we could all enjoy.
Yeah.
Actually, me and Maurice were just talking about this the other day. Macaulay Culkin is awesome in the new American Horror Story. If you guys aren't watching it,
I have not. And yeah. Is it the double feature or the season?
The double feature.
Well, that is the new season.
Isn't it just standalone episodes?
No, that was American Horror Stories. They did a, like, I think it was seven or eight episodes. I can't remember how many
seven.
Episodes.
Okay, seven. So this is like a full year story arc.
Yeah,
called double features. Got it.
And honestly, the story is really cool so far, but you know, Macaulay Culkin's the best thing about it. Like, he's really good.
The last full season I watched was the Carnival season.
Oh, wow.
I never even finished the first season. Once they killed off my favorite character, I went, nope, I'm done. You killed off the other one I liked, and I'm not watching any more of this crap, and I turned it off. I never liked it.
See, I've said this multiple times. This first season, I fucking hate. I hate the first season so much. The rest, I actually really enjoy. So, but honestly, Mike, I think you should watch 1984, which was the last season that came out. It was good. I think you would enjoy it. Or no, was it the last one? Yeah, it was the last one. It's weird as fuck. It jumps the shark back and forth.
It's on my giant list of things to kind of get to. So I want to finish up Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Oh, great series.
I need to finish up Z Nation.
Another great series.
I stopped watching The Walking Dead when they killed Carl.
I'm a few seasons behind.
Haven't watched the last two seasons of Fear of the Walking Dead. I feel like I need to finish them. I don't know. And then everything that comes out that I'm trying to keep up with, like The Boys. Mm-hmm. It's just hard.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know? So, yeah, we'll see, you know, Masters of the Universe. I say I'm going to watch all this stuff, but I might just sit in my basement and set up toys. Or lose 20 hours playing Zelda and not even realize it.
Oh, well, the Count Creepyhead will be happy to know I finished Masters of the Universe myself. And hey. I don't know what everybody is complaining about.
Thank you.
It's quite obvious what is happening.
I think the people complaining are us complaining about the people complaining. I honestly, nobody's ever come up. I mean, the people who come up to me with complaints are valid complaints that I can agree with. Mm-hmm. And they're not like mad. They're just like, yeah, it's not for me.
Yeah.
My only complaint is I wish it wasn't Sarah Michelle Gellar. That is literally my only complaint because it's just Buffy again.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen this character already from her. If she had done like something different, I may have liked it, but I've seen this character already.
Yeah, I mean, I have a good friend who, like, He-Man is his thing, and he's like, you know what, I kind of didn't need it to pick up in the middle of the story. I needed, you know, they got to retell it because this is kind of its own universe, so I need to see Adam getting the sword and all that. And I like the one from the 2000s, whatever. I'll buy the toys. I just didn't dig the cartoon that much. And he's not like, women ruin everything and blah, blah, blah. He's just like, meh.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like, okay, I totally respect that. He's not on the internet 18 hours a day ragging on and on about it.
The people that I know personally who have complained about it, yeah, none of it has been like, hey, woke, you know, none of that bullshit. Obviously, the shit you see online is a lot of bullshit. But again, that's the vocal minority. I just feel bad for the way Kevin Smith was getting dragged through the mud, and it's like, dude still made a good property. Shut up.
He got paid.
I don't think he cares.
Kevin Smith was already moving on to his next project.
Yeah, he was working on Clerks 3.
Which is already done, and he's moving on to the next thing. You know?
He better get to Moose Jaws. I want to see Moose Jaws. But anyway, we kind of went off the rails there for a minute.
Yeah, we went into a different podcast. Sorry.
Not a lot of trivia that we haven't mentioned already. But one thing I found kind of interesting is in order to make the actors feel what the characters were going through, all of the Walmart bathroom scenes were filmed in chronological order. So they actually, you know, started right with the tub scene. Like, that was the very first scene. And they filmed the entire thing in you know, chronological order, like throughout the process of the two of them breaking down. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
So you know, like, horror movie conventions aren't a big thing yet because of COVID, but you can go to any Walmart bathroom and it's like visiting a set.
This is very true.
So there may not be any haunted houses, but you can go to the Niagara Falls bathroom and just be like, oh wow, there's two guys chained to a wall.
Mm-hmm.
There was one that Josh and I stopped in on our way to Texas, and it was literally one of those moments of like, okay, I actually have to use the bathroom. I went in and it was so god awful. I'm like, I can wait. Like, I couldn't. There was no doors on any of the stalls. Like, there was piss on the floor. It was bad. Like,
life
no.
Pro tip. You ready? You listening?
Mm-hmm.
Go to the back of the store every time, because that's the employee bathroom.
Okay.
It's also available to customers. They keep that clean because the employees use it.
Good to know. I wish I had known that at the time.
Front of the store is where you're going to get, like, the crackheads are going to come in, do a bird bath in the sink, chain their buddy up, crap on the floor, you know.
Paint an X on the wall.
For a good time call, 555, with their poo, all that.
Oh, Lord. Few other things. The entire film was only 18 days to shoot. So that was pretty quick. Also, I love hearing stuff like this when these movies are successful. James Wan didn't take any payment up front. He took a gamble on and said he would agree to a percentage of the film's gross. So he believed enough in his project that it was going to do well. And usually producers love that because then they don't have to pay the director anything. And so he made a lot of money off of this movie.
I was going to say that's he must have gotten DVD sales because I remember working this and it didn't do much. At my theater, it didn't do much.
It made over 100 million.
Yeah,
the sequel. We couldn't keep people. We had to like kick people out. We're like, nope, stay away.
No, Maurice, go ahead. Because I know.
I think it made over 100 million globally at the box office.
Yep. It did. It did pretty well, especially for its budget. And based on the opening weekend, they approved Saw 2 that weekend.
Yep.
So.
Well, that's because horror movies are cheap to make.
Sure. I mean, that's perfectly logical. You know, that's why a lot of people do throw money at horror movies because they can get away with a cheap investment. And there's usually a pretty good return on it.
And that's why we're going to be seeing more horror movies in today's age of COVID.
Yep.
Because if you're going to make a blockbuster that's going to fail, you need to make a smaller, more successful film with a higher return, which is horror movies. So enjoy the new Golden Age. Or Disney films, yeah.
A few other quick little things is James Wan apparently built the puppet. So the famous Billy puppet was built by James Wan. They originally...
I was going to say, he's had that puppet for years, didn't he? It ends up in Dead Silence. I know that.
Yeah, yes, there's a fun cameo in that. Which is not a good movie.
See, now, I don't hate it. I don't like the quote-unquote uncut where they added in all the fucking CGI bullshit. But the theatrical release, I did enjoy it for what it was.
I was going to say, I rewatched it recently, and I don't mind that one.
Okay. I like Donnie Wahlberg, and the rest, I'm like, meh.
Yeah, the acting is not great in that one either.
I was puppeted out at that point already, and I was just like, meh, if Charlie Band isn't doing it, I don't want anything to do with it.
What were you going to say, Maurice?
I just said that I enjoyed the movie, too.
Yeah.
Mike, you're outvoted.
That's okay. Look, I've never... My opinion isn't the gold standard, trust me, because I like some really, really bad movies. So my taste in film...
Well, neither is mine, because I hate Blood Rage.
You son of a bitch.
And he likes Shark Boy and Lava Girl. Oh, I think I got them all in, guys. Did I get them all in this one? All right.
Whew. I think you did. But last but not least, I found this interesting was Tobin Bell actually lied face down in the bathroom for the shots where he was needed, like where the corpse was needed. They didn't use a dummy. It was actually just him laying there with the latex and blood on him. And so
how else was he supposed to get paid?
But that makes it even more funny when, you know, Adam makes the comment of dead bodies look different in real life. They don't move. It's like, that's kind of fun.
Like, they don't check to see if he's breathing, if he farts, you know, like.
No, they just see all the blood. They just see all the blood and like, yeah, this guy's dead.
Yeah.
He was probably dropping little silent toots the entire time, but, you know, the room already smelled like shit, so it didn't matter.
I'd be having fun with it if I was playing a fake corpse.
Just dropping bombs.
I would just shit myself, because, I mean, if you're dead, I hear that happens. So I just be like, take that, you two.
Enjoy that scent.
I really hate you.
Oh, Lordy. Well, we should probably start wrapping this one up. So for those of you not following us on social media, we are the Boogeyman's Closet on both Facebook and Instagram. And Maurice handles our Twitter. What is that, good sir?
At Boogeyman's The.
Thank you very much. We're still doing our giveaways every month. This month's is a doozy, so definitely check it out if you're not following us already for how you can win that. We also have a Patreon. It's $3 a month for all of our audio content, which includes all of these episodes unedited. This one will be a long one. and at least one new episode every month that's exclusive to Patreon. Every tier above that will get you stuff sent in the mail, like artwork and goodies. Mike, I'd like to turn it over to you so you can plug our other podcast that we discussed multiple times throughout this episode.
Listen to Count Creepyhead's Saturday Morning Monster Mash, featuring almost all of the players you get to listen to on the Boogeyman's Closet, where it's essentially Boogeyman's Closet, but with toys. And less rules. We kind of don't stick to any kind of plan. But everything else is pretty much the same.
And we always have fun guests.
Yes.
Dawn. But they bleep out the swearing.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck. If you want to swear, you got to come to this fucking podcast.
Yeah, we're the PG-13 little brother of Boogie Man's Closet. But I am not the best editor, and I miss swearing a lot.
There's been a few times I've caught myself, and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have said that.
No, you're fine. It's more like I can't focus while I'm editing. So sometimes I get distracted with something else, and then a fuck or a shit kind of slips through. But we have a 10-year-old listener. So I'm always trying to be like very careful about what makes it onto the podcast, because his mother scares the shit out of me.
So we can assume that, you know, when Josh talks about putting his dick in things, it won't be on the show.
Just at the very end of that episode, I cut a lot of Josh threatening to stick his dick into stuff.
Oh, and that's God. Just a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, yes. if you guys want to know what I'm talking about, listen to our Friday the 13th episode. And I try to gain the favor of a Hong Kong toy import company, and Josh just loses his shit and threatens to fuck all of their toys.
Yep.
So my little cheap plug gets cut to pieces because Josh is just like, but can I stick my dick in it? Can you stick it in my dick? It's hilarious, but it's like, oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, the joy of podcasting.
Yep.
But for those of you that like to watch our next movie before we cover it, episode 111 will be Club Dread. I know Dawn is looking forward to that one.
For quite some time. So that means I'm probably going to get stuck in this internet again. Damn it.
Yeah, we're going to have to put you back in the internet cell for another week.
No, you don't know. I ended up on anti-vaxxer sites and I didn't want to be there. They're so horrible.
Oh, no.
Is Dawn just like a genie? Like, do we get three wishes every time she comes out?
Did you know about the gay frogs? Do you know about them?
Oh, my God. That fucking video. Have you seen the dance, the gay frog dance?
Who hasn't? Come on.
Oh, my God.
No.
Every time that pops up.
Turns a freaking frog's gay.
Do you understand that? Freaking frog's gay. I laugh so fucking hard every time that pops up in my feed. Oh, Alex Jones, he's insane. But anywho, we're gonna wrap this up. So thank you both, Mike and Dawn, for joining us. It's always a pleasure.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, so we will wrap this up here. So as always, this is Mike saying goodbye.
See ya.
As always, fuck Space Jam 2.
Punky's in the refrigerator.
It's Punky. Not Punky!
It is.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, follow us on Instagram at The Boogeyman's Closet, where you can stay up to date with everything we have planned.